From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Nandi Show. Last week, students at Mount Hebron High School in Howard County, Maryland, staged a walkout during class. The protest was triggered by a headline-grabbing incident. A video showed up online of a white male student's racist rant at a party. A few young activists decided the incident offered an opportunity to call attention to what they say is a culture of racism in their halls. Here to talk about what happened and how activism is playing out, not just at colleges and in city streets, but in the halls of local high schools, is Lena Cabeda. She is a junior at Mount Hebron High School. Lena, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Sarah Chernikov. She is also a junior at Mount Hebron High School in Howard County, Maryland. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
You both organized the walkout that happened last Tuesday. Can you share with us the story of how you heard about the video, what you saw in the video, and why you decided to organize the protest?
The individual posted the video on an app called Periscope. Then I had reposted it on Twitter because I wanted to spread awareness that I don't tolerate discrimination in the classroom. I just wanted to spread awareness and then...
And we had this walkout to make a statement. We weren't going to tolerate racism within our school and within our school system. We wanted to stand against racism and any form of discrimination. For too long, these issues of discrimination have been swept under the rug. And we also wanted to make it aware that the walkout wasn't solely because of the video. Issues like these have been occurring within our school for many years now, and we can't reverse what that student said in the video, but we can acknowledge it and we can say why this is inappropriate, why this isn't okay, and why we don't tolerate it. And we wanted to say that this issue of racism and discrimination, it's not isolated to just Mount Hebron High School. This affects students in all high schools. And just last week, Hammond High School had a walkout to address the Black Lives Matter dialogue. And in the future, other high schools will be having walkouts as well.
Tell me the scene about the protest. What was the protest like?
The protest was very peaceful. People were able to voice their opinions and concerns, and we were all in that moment united as one.
Were the protest, in your view, well attended?
The protest, in my view, was well attended. It was not chaotic. It was very peaceful, positive. It was full of love.
It was extremely empowering as well, I would say. About over 150 students attended, and there were community members as well and local activists who came and joined us.
Were the school's administrators supportive of the protest?
Well, they were cooperative with us. We hadn't informed them about the protest because we realized this is a form of civil disobedience and there was no way that they would approve of it. But in the end, they realized that this was going to happen no matter what, so they worked with us very well in making sure that it was peaceful and remained peaceful.
Did you have any specific demands for the Howard County school system?
Yes. One demand was included in my speech, and that was, we want the school to incorporate mandatory ethnic study classes into the school curriculum. Ethnic study classes are offered as an elective in Mount Hebron's course selection, but there are too few students willing to sign up for these classes to actually make them last. These classes commonly end up being canceled, showing how much Mount Hebron students as well as staff value learning about other cultures. Like most schools in the country, Mount Hebron's curriculum is extremely Eurocentric in how it teaches students about history and social science. Ethnic study courses have been shown to help give students a better perspective as to how other cultures behave.
If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Did you witness or experience racism in school? How did you respond? Are you involved in local activism? What value do young people bring to the table? Should school administrators allow students to organize protests during school? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or tweet at Kojo Show, or you can go to our website, kojoshow.org, and join the conversation there. Sarah, you've said the walkout was not a response to the video itself, but rather to the culture of racism that exists at Mount Hebron High School. Exactly how is that racism displayed on a day-to-day basis?
One example of racial discrimination within our school is an area in the school referred to as the jungle. It's an example of a racial epithet, and it's called the jungle because it's stereotyping people of color. This area is a place where students of color tend to congregate, and people are stereotyping them by calling them loud and animal-like. And another example of racism is a location in the school called the no-fly zone where Muslim students congregate. And when I first heard about this, I was dumbstruck. I couldn't believe how popular this stereotype was among students.
Lena, at your speech at the rally, you spoke about some of the racism you've experienced personally at school. Can you share that with us?
Students were making fun of my natural curly hair ever since I was a freshman. Just last year, a student in my class called me the N-word, and she mockingly told me that black people were ugly when they come out the womb. I took my concerns to administration, and they told me that we would have a meeting, and that kind of behavior was not tolerated in the school, but there was no meeting, and my story is not unique.
I see your hair as being highly fashionable. Am I out of touch here, or what?
I'm not sure why people think that is. I love my hair, and I love my black features.
Have you heard from students at other local high schools who report similar racism in their halls?
Yeah. Students from Howard came to our protest, and they talked about personal experiences with racism. Students from River Hill, students from Merritt's Ridge, students from all over the county came and demonstrated with us and talked about their personal experiences. These situations aren't isolated to just Mount Hebron High School.
On to the telephones. Put on your headphones, please, over your beautiful hair so that you can actually hear what our callers are saying. Here is Joy in Montgomery County, Maryland. Joy, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I have lived a long, long time, and I know that you cannot program other people's thinking, you know, and whatever they are, you know. I think if you're a member, well, everyone is a member of some kind of minority group. You might not realize it. But living in the South, being of a minority, which really, I mean, most people there had not encountered this kind of minority. Well, you know, we realize.
What kind of minority are you talking about?
Jewish.
Okay.
All right, so we lived in rural Mid-South. And look, I mean, these people, it's a matter of being benighted and not really understanding a lot. And number one, people's thinking.
Well,
so what?
What do you suggest should be done? Simply ignore it?
Yeah. Because I think what people should do would be just be secure in your own identity.
You can't ignore the situation. We need to have ethnic study classes so people can be aware of others' cultures. We can't simply live in ignorance.
Can you ignore people who are calling you names, people who are using all kinds of terms to describe you? Can you ignore that?
At the end of the day, it hurts. I can ignore that because me, myself, I love my black features. But we also need to be aware that those children, they don't know any better. We need to educate them instead of letting them be ignorant. I understand that people are subjected to think whatever they want. But we also, as a school, need to educate them, put them on the right direction. If they end up with these hateful ideas, then let them. But let educators educate them.
That's the voice of Lena Kabeda. She's a junior at Mount Hebron High School. She joins us in the studio along with Sarah Chernikoff, who is also a junior at Mount Hebron High School in Howard County, Maryland. And joining us now in studio is Nat Chioke Williams. He is the executive director of the Hill Snowden Foundation, where he manages youth organizing and the Making Black Lives Matter initiative. Nat Chioke Williams, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kabeda.
Other local high schoolers have been talking about the racism they've been experiencing at school, like students at Bethesda Chevy Chase, a predominantly white school that made a video about what it feels like to be a minority there, and students at Woodrow Wilson High School here in D.C. who have demanded that their school's name be changed because of that president's racist legacy. Your organization encourages young people like Lena and Sarah and the other students I mentioned to get involved in activism. Why do you see that as being valuable to young people?
It's a critical part of their social development, their political development, and more importantly, it's a critical part of the development of this country. Young people have always been at the forefront of leading the nation, leading the nation towards a better future, and leading the nation towards dealing with the history and legacy of racial discrimination and other issues that we have. And so, as Lena was just saying very, very poignantly, it's the responsibility of the schools, it's the responsibility of the society to push this type of education so that we can actually have authentic relationships with one another.
How does your organization encourage youth activism?
So specifically, we're a foundation. So we make grants to organizations, and in relation to youth organizing, we make grants to organizations that work with young people, middle school to high school age, primarily youth of color, to identify issues in their schools, to identify strategies, and to work together to bring those solutions to school administrators, but also beyond that, in the broader community, to elected officials and whatnot.
Do you think parents and educators should encourage their kids to organize, as Lena and Sarah did?
Of course, of course. It's fundamental, and I'll speak as a parent. And it's actually the situation when I was reading about the protests at Mount Hebron made me think, because I have two young kids. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And in my daily work, I deal with issues around structural racism. I deal with issues around organizing. But I have been reticent in actually talking to them about the racism that goes on outside their door. We talk about Black History Month. We talk about the Civil Rights Movement. But we don't talk about the daily expressions, and not just about people saying things, but about the systemic aspects of that.
That's a fascinating issue. When do you think is a good time to start talking to kids about that? Because they're now 4 and 6, and you want them to have at least some idealism, some happiness in their lives before they confront the reality of what happens when they walk out that door. But when is a good time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it's, and that was my challenge, is that mm-hmm. I wanted to try to protect their innocence, because I knew as they got older, they were going to be classified as guilty. They were going to be classified as inferior by folks outside of their family. But what I've come to see is that the only way to really deal with this is to fortify them with the actual knowledge. Fortify them with their own sense of self, and more importantly, as Lena and Sarah are doing, help them to make the decisions to fight for themselves, fight for Black people, and fight for other oppressed and marginalized people. And you can start that at any age. You can develop those values and cultivate those values at any age.
So Sarah and Lena, in the video, the student specifically targets the Black Lives Matter movement when he says Black lives don't matter. Did that movement inspire you or inspire your decision to have this protest?
The Black Lives Matter movement and other kids across the country demonstrating the things that what me and Sarah did, that gave me courage. Also, people of the Black Lives Matter movement contacted me and Sarah, such as Kwame Rose and DeRay McKesson. They gave us a tremendous amount of courage. But what really inspired me the most was my family and my friends, who told me to push forward regardless of the people trying to tear me down.
In your case, Sarah?
I would say that we support the meaning behind the Black Lives Matter movement and all that it stands for, but specifically for this walkout, we made it so that discrimination, we could stand against all kinds of discrimination, whether it be racial discrimination, socioeconomic status, sexual preference, gender orientation, or disability. It doesn't matter. We got together and stood against any form of discrimination.
You mentioned that you got a call from Mr. McKesson, or you spoke with him?
I spoke with Kwame Rose.
Oh, Kwame Rose. Okay. On now to the telephones. Here is Mark in Washington, D.C. Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, hi. I wanted to say that in Howard County, my experience was that there is a good old boys network that's pretty racist in Howard County itself. While in Columbia, you might not notice it because Columbia is onto itself. But and I've been going up to Columbia to visit my sister, who lives up there, for a long time, and I did not notice it until I operated a business in Columbia and, was in contact with just the regular people outside in Howard County. And it's almost like the Eastern Shore, and I was really surprised in the stories I would hear how they would treat Black people as recently as 30 years ago was pretty alarming. And if I had known about it, I probably would not have opened up any business up there. But I really applaud what you guys are doing. And you don't have to take a backseat to anybody.
Mark, you know what's interesting about that is that in Howard County, Columbia was a community that was created specifically to avoid this kind of thing. It was a planned community. It was a planned, integrated community. And one of the reasons for its existence was to try to have that, to have Columbia be a demonstration of harmonious living between the races. And to have that happen in Howard County now is particularly, at this point, distressing for a lot of people. But thank you very much for your call. I'll go to Brian, who is in Columbia, Maryland. Brian, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Kojo, how's it going? I just want to say, first off, just how proud I am of these students for taking the time out to go and do that. I graduated from Oklahoma about 10 years ago now, and that was always the case with the outer schools outside of Columbia. Obviously, racism exists everywhere. I mean, as you pointed out in Hammond, I mean, there were things in Oklahoma. There are people that I went to school with who hold some, you know, opinions and things like that, that I'm kind of surprised, given that we had the opportunity to get to know so many different kinds of people. But it was always the case. This is a pretty long-standing thing, and I think it's just incredibly important now that you guys are taking the opportunity to address that in a much larger case. And just, you know, thank you to Kojo for giving them this platform to stand on. That's really important.
Okay,
that's really all I had to say.
And thank you very much for your call, Brian. The protest at Mount Hebron was during school hours and caused students to miss class. There are those who would say, do you think that was the best way for students to make a statement?
We wanted to send an effective message to not only students, but to teachers, the administration, school board, parents, and community members. Discrimination would not be tolerated. We didn't make it convenient for administrators and teachers because they haven't been properly addressing these issues. And in all honesty, true change requires a disruption of the norm.
Here's Bob in Chilham, Maryland, who may not agree with you. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, folks. How are you doing today?
Doing well.
Good. Well, this is an appropriate context for this to be said. Dialogue can't happen if you tell the other side to shut up before they even speak. And you can't win an argument by presenting your superior ideas unless you allow someone to present their inferior ideas. So calling for censorship is not going to ultimately get you what you want.
Well, let's find out if they are calling for censorship. Are you calling for censorship?
No, we aren't calling for censorship. We want people to address their personal experiences with racism and discrimination.
Allowing kids to protest, allowing this demonstration to happen out front of our school was very convenient because all the kids were at one place and we all wanted our voices to be heard. And what better place is that than a school?
Well, our caller, I guess, feels that you want the offending person's voice to be silenced. Is that what you were calling for?
No, not at all.
Hasn't that?
Yeah, I just want to say he may be referring to the superintendent. Who actually sent out a letter asking for the video not to be shared and asking for it to be deleted. And that is that was her particular position and how to, I guess, deal with the situation. But it's absolutely right that it is shutting down the conversation. The only way that this nation, the only way that a society can actually deal with the cancer of structural racism is to engage in the conversation. And I think that having the protests whenever they happen and however they happen, and I hope they continue to happen, and the dialogue, that is the way that you continue to push to have a real elevated conversation around this. And hopefully we can move to a place where we actually are able to start to eradicate and break down some of the walls around structural racism.
Got an email from Carla, who identifies as a Howard County resident. I want both of these young ladies to know that as a Howard County resident, I am proud of them for standing up for yourselves. Also, your demands are reasonable and they are thoughtful. What do you think the Howard County school system can do to create a more tolerant atmosphere at its schools?
Like I said before, I believe that there should be proper funding in order to have these mandatory ethnic studies classes so that people can be exposed to other cultures, especially when you start off young, because that information will be stored in young children's minds.
Have you had conversations with school officials since the protest on how you might move forward here?
I went to a budgeting meeting, a Howard County budgeting meeting, and I basically said the same thing, that we need to have proper funding in order to have mandatory ethnic study classes. And we are continuously trying to work with Board of Ed members to get our goals achieved.
Here is Troy in Ellicott City, Maryland. Troy, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how you doing? I attended the rally, and I thought that the way that people that were speaking categorized the white race as racist was completely and utterly disgusting. I think that the way that the cops were treated that were standing right there condoning their rally, I think the way that they were yelled at for being racist, I think that was completely and utterly disrespectful. What?
Here you go.
Okay. I was basically the one who organized this demonstration, and I had helped with organizers. No one said anything about white people being racist, because anybody can be racist. Even people of the same skin complexion as me were trying to tear me down. No one said anything like that. And to the police that were there, I don't remember anybody saying anything to the police. The only thing that I said personally was that I'm scared that policemen will knock on my door and tell me that my brother was shot dead. That's the only thing I said. The police were being respected by people around them, and there was no hate towards the white race. It was full of love and positivity.
Sarah, is that what you also witnessed at the rally?
Yeah, I agree with Lena totally. I didn't see any hate being spread. What I saw was empowerment and passion from people speaking out against discrimination. And the police were respected, and administration was respected. I'm not sure what perspective you saw from, but from our perspective and from the students' perspective, it was extremely peaceful and empowering.
Nat, do young people approach activism differently than older people do?
I think young people are both more dynamic, more willing to take risks than I wouldn't necessarily call us old people, but more settled people. And we've seen this throughout. And like I said, that is why young people are usually at the forefront of pushing for deep, profound changes. And they've also are from behind pushing people who are in front of them, older, settled people, whatever, to move forward. Can I just say one other thing? I think we need to make a distinction and broaden the conversation between intentional hate-filled messages and actions and structural change, structural racism that actually defines that, systemic racism that actually creates the environment for that. And I think in addition, so when we're talking about an individual releasing a video, that's very different than we're talking about what y'all are proposing. Changes in an institution to create an environment that's supportive of not the just recognition of culture, but the recognition of the challenges that we have to face together.
We'll be discussing more about that in the next segment on this broadcast. But before we go, I wanted to get in one more call from Rachel in Silver Spring, Maryland. Rachel, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I think what the students are doing is absolutely wonderful. And one more thing that I would add to the education aspect of it is teaching students how to deal one-on-one with, well, insults. Like this segment started with one of the students describing an insult that somebody made about her hair and her looks. And unfortunately, I'm Jewish, and I've had, throughout my life, people lose money and you must be rich and, what the standard insults. And that's something that can't be regulated. The education will hopefully help people understand certain aspects of why what they're saying is, terribly insulting. But the other issue that's important is you can't regulate what's stupid racist people say. And, whether it's a school or a work environment, you know, you can have a rule that you're not allowed to insult people, but it doesn't work that way in life.
Okay.
And so I think it's really important to also teach people how to deal with one-on-one interaction that may be unpleasant.
All of which, as I said, we'll be discussing in our next segment. Finally, there's this email from Evan who writes, good job standing up for your rights. Keep on keeping on. You are an example to everyone. The lady who just said ignore it is so wrong. Look at civil rights movements, MLK, women's suffrage, abolitionists, etc. I'm white, and I benefited from taking a full year of African-American studies in college. Racism is a sign and symptom of ignorance. That's all the time we had in this segment. Nat Chioke Williams, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Lena Kabeda, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Sarah Chernikoff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about what can be done in the educational process and the education system to address these issues. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.